Jay Mariotti here, and that out-of-control Kansas player who was firing punches and wielding a stool over his head, prepared to clobber Kansas State opponents, security guards, fans in wheelchairs, and anybody in sight? His name is Silvio DeSosa, who was suspended a year ago in connection to a corruption case involving Adidas and the Kansas program, meaning college basketball got exactly what it deserved in this ugly melee. The sleaze that engulfed the sport, you remember the bribery stench and the sneaker trials, came back to bite Coach Bill Self, who called this brawl embarrassing when he is the embarrassment, the shady and disreputable ringleader whose program shouldn't be allowed anywhere near March Madness after that Adidas scandal and this brawling madness. All of which happened at venerable Allen Fieldhouse on James Naismith Court on the very same night when an Illinois player stomped on the body of a fallen Purdue player. Predictably, DeSosa's punishment was laughable, a 12-game suspension, meaning he'll be back just in time for the Big 12 tournament and the NCAA tournament, of course. How about banning this jerk for life? No. College basketball is lucky to be on the sports radar anymore, and when it finally becomes a headline, the buzz is horrific. We tend to make fun of Dick Vitale about his outsized enthusiasm for the sport, but at age 80 now, Dickie V nailed it. The scene was perilously close to becoming the college version of Malice at the Palace.
Wow, just absolutely sickening, unbelievable. In 40 years on my TV, I haven't seen anything like that unless you go to the NBA and you look at the Pistons brawl that took place at the Palace. I think there's no doubt in my mind that DeSosa never, ever should put a uniform on again in college basketball. None. As Seth said, and I couldn't agree more, he's holding a chair. I mean, that's criminal. He's going to hurt somebody. I mean, I don't want to hear the excuse that they stole the ball with time running out, should have never done such. Give me a break. That was ugly. Where were the coaches, the assistants, keeping their team on the bench? That's the first rule. One assistant should take charge and make sure that no one gets there. It is sickening. There's no place in the game. That was almost criminal what DeSosa has done. I'll be shocked if he ever wears a uniform again in a Kansas uniform.
Dickie V should have taken his crusade another step. Never again should we see Bill Self on a college sideline.
Welcome to Unmuted with Jay Mariotti,
the podcast devoted to making sports talk great again.
Few have made more impact in sports media than Jay, and certainly no one has been called more names. Some actually true. He's the fiercely independent lightning rod who has produced massive ratings for ESPN's Around the Horn, made powerful waves as a national and major market talk host, and ruled Chicago as a columnist for 17 years. Unmuted is a topical whirlwind that doesn't stop until all the news is analyzed. So here he is, back from his day job in Hollywood. For the next half hour or so. Or maybe 40 minutes, depending on the Lakers, Raiders, Trump, and Odell Beckham Jr.'s latest mood swing. The one, the only, Jay Mariotti.
Antonio Brown is a danger to society, a savage freak show who deserves our scorn and animus and not a smidgen of pity. This is a tragedy waiting for the ambulance sirens, and not until he's locked up in a rehab facility or behind bars will Brown have any chance of saving his life and stop harming the lives of others. Now, with police charging him on felonies of battery and burglary, maybe there's a chance to repair him. Brown and his trainer allegedly battered the driver of a moving truck outside his residence in Hollywood, Florida, with Brown accused of picking up a rock and throwing it at the vehicle. Then he locked himself in the house and refused to speak to police. What I want to know is, why has Brown been allowed to slide so often? He has been accused of sexual assault. He once sped more than 100 miles an hour down a busy Pittsburgh road. He threw furniture off the 14th floor balcony of a condo building, including two vases and an ottoman, and nearly hit a 22-month-old boy. Only 2 weeks ago, he directed an obscene outburst toward police and the mother of his children, and then threw a bag of gummy penises at them. I didn't even know they made gummy penises, but only Brown would know that, and it was a scene he streamed live on Instagram.
This is the second time these people was here, bro.
Little boy, it's hurtful that dealership.
So what about my car, though, bro? How could she leave with a car? How you gonna get a bill? You don't even have a job, but you can't even pay the insurance. Broke ass. Bag of d***s. Chuz, it's the bag of d***s. Take that bitch to jail, man. She a baster. She don't want to know.
This after he was released by two NFL teams, the Raiders and Patriots, that dearly wanted his game-breaking services. And yet it took this week's episode for reality to hit home. Antonio Brown is a sick man. When agent Drew Rosenhaus, who gladly would take on Bill Cosby or Harvey Weinstein as a client, terminates his relationship with Brown until he seeks counseling, that's all you need to know about a man-child hitting rock bottom. They actually chanted MVP, MVP during Zion Williamson's sensational breakthrough in the fourth quarter when he hit all four of his three-point shots, converted an alley-oop, scored 17 points in just over 3 minutes, and gave the sleepy Pelicans the lead, electrifying the New Orleans crowd. And then he was ordered to sit for the rest of his NBA debut, and the Pels lost to the Spurs, a reminder that his NBA infancy will be a guarded work in progress, more about protecting his surgically repaired right knee than any immediate takeover of the game. After a slow start in the first three quarters, Zion showed us he will dominate in due time. Once he's finished playing 3 to 6 minute spurts and retreating to a bicycle, for now, Pelicans basketball boss David Griffin is babying Zion, knowing what a breathtaking future he has. But the fans down there, they were bummed. Some booed. They chanted, "We want Zion." Maybe they would have won the game if he had stayed in. If he's not healthy, why are you force feeding him into the lineup? Something wrong here. I guess everybody needs to be patient. With Zion and all-star caliber Brandon Ingram and a reborn Lonzo Ball, the Pelicans' future is very bright, yet I must say a cloud hovers. I think everybody is concerned, but they're not talking about it, about Williamson's weight structure. I'm not saying he's heavy, but his weight structure is such on his body that he's always going to be vulnerable to injury, as we saw at Duke. It is a fascinating story for a league that does need fresh narratives. And a monumental redemptive season for LeBron James finally has hit a crater. His 15-year-old son, Bronny, was struck by debris during the latest stop in Sierra Canyon High School's barnstorming Tour of America, a loss in Springfield, Massachusetts, and the referee stopped the game to eject the fan. I have two problems with this. One, I've stated before. Recalling the immense pressure on Michael Jordan's sons when they played organized basketball as teenagers, I cringe at the idea of LeBron's teenage son being trotted around the country with Dwayne Wade's son and other young standouts on this LA-based team in a circus that includes 15 games aired by various ESPN networks. It is indeed exploitation, as Charles Barkley said on Inside the NBA. Chuck and I are in agreement for a change.
I don't know if we should be showing high school kids.
Oh, stop it.
He's a freshman in high school.
He's pretty good. Let him go.
The other networks have kind of taken over the high school television.
Do these high school players, we always talk about college players being exploited. This is the ultimate exploitation.
It's good basketball. Let it go.
It's sports. That's not the point, Shaq.
So what is the
point? What is the financial incentive other than the network making money on these high school kids? We always complain about college teams are making all this money, but
high school. It's going to be middle school next.
Come on, man.
And why did LeBron spend 5 hours on a Lakers game day in Massachusetts, in Boston, 3 hours back and forth in a car, 2 hours at Bronny's game, instead of resting in his hotel room. The Lakers were routed by the Celtics that night, and afterward, a father sounded distracted by what had happened to his son.
Well, I didn't see it until I got here, actually. I did see the, I was on the complete opposite end of the floor. I did see the referee stop the game or stop the inbounds, and a cop came up there, but I didn't even know what happened until the video evidence showed me today when I got here. I mean, it's just disrespectful. I mean, and it was a little kid, too. I don't know how old that little kid was. I don't know. I don't know if he learned that on his own or he learned that at home or whatever the case may be, but it's disrespectful. I wonder how old that kid is. You know, if he was the age around Bronny's age or Bryce's age. And, I would like him to see him try that while they're paying attention.
A couple of Bronny's teammates, I think, after the game said that he goes through a lot of things.
Yeah, he does.
And does he talk to you about that?
Nah, because he's a cool, calm. He's better than his mom and dad, let's just say that. He is. He's better than his mom and dad for some of the things that he lets off his shoulder. Well, I guess he's taking up for me, too, because I let a lot of shit go, too. But he's a great kid, and most importantly, he just loves being around his teammates, being a great kid, you know, being a model citizen in the community and playing the game that he loves to play and being a big brother to his brother and sister. But that shit earlier made me mad when I saw that. It's just disrespectful.
I need to skip specials.
Look, I get why he wants to watch his son play. LeBron misses too many of Bronny's games as it is. But millions of fathers out there have job conflicts and they don't bolt an assignment to watch their kids play and then botch the assignment in the end as LeBron did. He didn't play well. They didn't play well. Why is he going to Springfield during the day? This will pass, of course, with LeBron on the verge of eclipsing Kobe Bryant on the all-time scoring list. Here in Los Angeles, LeBron never will be Kobe, who grew up here from his teen years, made his life mistakes here, fought with Shaquille O'Neal here, and ultimately won 5 titles in considerable glory here while spending his entire career in L.A. as a Laker. LeBron, by comparison, is a mercenary with his third franchise who came here to be a Hollywood mogul. But there is no animosity between the two. Kobe has moved on to have 2 more daughters. He won an Oscar as a media mogul himself. And if the Lakers do win a title this season, they actually might let an artist draw a LeBron mural without defacing it in L.A. That's what happened when he showed up here. And you knew it wouldn't take long for LaVar Ball to emerge from his cave. With son LaMelo expected to go high in the NBA draft, the ball buster wants the Knicks to draft his son, then hire Mark Jackson as the coach. You know what? LaVar Ball and James Dolan deserve each other. I hope that happens. As a slave to the owners who pay him, Rob Manfred naturally won't be stripping the Astros, Red Sox, and other electronic sign stealers of their World Series trophies. Manfred is a coward, ignoring the consumer fraud at hand to protect the dirty franchises, and he makes scapegoats of the general manager and the manager, but never ever the owner. Rather than throw down the hammer, Manfred struck a deal with the players' union, granting immunity in exchange for honesty. Why is he making deals and letting the players off the hook after catching them red-handed? As I said, what a coward. After being so oblivious to begin with to this rampant cheating the last 3 years. Here was the so-called commissioner showing his face finally for the first time since the scandal on Fox Business Network.
You know, whatever the impact of the sign stealing was, it could have changed who was in the World Series. Absolutely unclear that the Dodgers would have been the World Series champion. I think there's a long tradition in baseball of not trying to change what happened. I think the answer from our perspective is to be transparent about what the investigation showed and let our fans make their own decision about what happened.
At least Jim Crane, owner of the disgraced Astros, is forcing his players to fess up and apologize in spring training for their role in the scandal. Crane is fortunate he can play this house-cleaning role. He keeps the 2017 World Series title, while Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch lose their livelihoods. But Crane can help matters a little bit if he does force the smug likes of Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve to address the truth after they showed a lack of remorse last weekend. Here was Crane.
I saw some of the things yesterday on with the guys interviewed. They're just kind of getting some advice to take it easy. When we get down to spring training, we'll all get them together, and they'll come out with a strong statement as a team, and I think, they'll apologize for what happened, and we'll move forward.
While I lobbied hard for Manfred to vacate those two series titles, I'll stop short in backing a Los Angeles City Council resolution that wants to award those titles to the Dodgers. Yes, both rogue teams cheated in those World Series, but are we certain that the Dodgers weren't cheating as well and simply haven't been caught? See, these days in baseball, all franchises are guilty until proven innocent. Hell, baseball can't even hold a slam dunk Hall of Fame election without another scandal. When the identity of the one rogue voter who didn't vote for Derek Jeter becomes a bigger story than Jeter's selection itself, well, I think it's time for the Baseball Writers Association of America to stop voting and for sports media as a whole to end all participation in award elections. I stopped voting many years ago, refusing to make the news when media professionals are supposed to be breaking and analyzing the news. And when this one idiot, whose identity is protected by the Hall of Fame and might never be revealed, decides to mock the system as the lone wolf of 397 voters, and he prevented Jeter from joining Yankee teammate Mariano Rivera as the only two unanimous inductees, well, it shames both the sport and the media business, both struggling to maintain credibility in the 21st century, with baseball, of course, currently mired in this self-inflicted sign-stealing crisis. Baseball is rightfully excoriated for its dishonesty, and I think the baseball media also should be crucified for a process that allows pranks to infect history, even if it was one ass clown. Simply put, we in the media should not be involved in determining sports legacies, especially when many aren't qualified to be in the media to begin with. Just as he brought some measure of tranquility and dignity during baseball steroid scandal, Jeter has reemerged now with exquisite timing amid the current cheating crisis. He won't be remembered as Captain Unanimous, but Jeter will live forever as the symbol of a pinstriped dynasty and the scandal-free face of a sport that no longer has such nationally embraced figures. Never mind that as an owner in Miami, Jeter might languish as Michael Jordan has in basketball. His induction reminds us why baseball still can be great when it's played the honest way, not the crooked way. Typically, Jeter took the high road on this rogue voter.
I mean, I could care less, to be quite honest with you. I mean, it takes a lot of votes to get into the Hall of Fame, and to get that many people to all agree is pretty difficult to do. So, I don't think about that. You know, it's a complete honor to be in the Hall of Fame.
And I'm thrilled to report that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens will not be joining Jeter in Cooperstown this summer, despite the misguided efforts of other media charlatans. One cannot slam teams and players as corrupt in this electronic sign-stealing scandal and then lobby for Bonds and Clemens and Hall balloting. Yet that is exactly what happened among many supposed watchdogs of the sport, the voting writers, who somehow were on a mission to forgive and forget crimes of steroids and lying under oath while scolding these sign-stealers as outrageously dirty, huh? Thankfully, they failed in their campaign, with both juicers falling short of the required 75%, Clemens at 61%, Bonds at 60.7%. But as long as writers hold such a responsibility for the sport's legacy, they should realize this much Cheating is cheating, kids, and anybody who voted for the juicers while condemning the sign stealers is guilty of a shallow double standard and lack of a concrete moral code. Larry Walker will join Jeter in Cooperstown, and didn't we love that SpongeBob shirt? Where did he get that? But the deserving Curt Schilling fell 20 votes shy because enough writers are still offended by his radical political views that they let it overwhelm a magnificent postseason legacy that includes the famed Bloody Sock game. But with a weak pool of first-time possibilities next season, it's likely Schilling will get in, assuming he doesn't say something unforgivably outrageous, which is possible, I guess. Meanwhile, it's becoming increasingly doubtful, tra-la, tra-la, hallelujah, that Clemens and Bonds ever will get in. As for the bumbling commissioner, Manfred has 2 months, opening day is March 26th, to implement what must be massive revisions to electronic sign-stealing practices. Does he realize players don't even need cameras and trash can banging to steal signs? They can head right to their lockers during games and check their phones. So is Manfred prepared to disassemble these video rooms and forbid players and team personnel from using videos during games? He's going to have to do that. Will he go so far to force players to stay in the dugout, in the bullpen, the entire game? And if they have to use the bathroom, hey, have an escort accompany them as you would when testing urine. Hey, baseball has made its filthy bed, and if the sport has any chance of regaining the ravaged public trust after an endless series of deceitful scandals, then it will require unusual concessions by the players. And if the players and their union don't like it, then scram, quit. I think America would be just fine without baseball and the dirt balls within. And we're still waiting for the Astros and the Red Sox to hire managers after the Mets hired somebody named Luis Rojas. Get your tickets now. Luis Rojas is managing your ball club. As you know, I have no faith in Manfred, who has yet to even implement a 20-second pitch clock to speed the pace of games years after saying he would. And there's little chance he'll get anything accomplished on the sign-stealing front before opening day. No, his office will keep doctoring the baseballs, and the players will keep juicing, and the thieves will keep using tech to steal signs. But Manfred did try to shift the narrative, saying MLB will be using a computerized camera system to call balls and strikes during spring training. Yep, when your building is burning and your sport is dying, let's blame the human umpires and replace them with robot umps. And people wonder why baseball is slogging its way to extinction in American culture. As for Mike Fiers, the ex-Astros pitcher who blew the whistle on the scheme, he continues to be ripped by small-minded baseball lifers who don't understand the real world. You know, we want the truth. Pedro Martinez is the latest to call Fiers a snitch, saying this on WEEI Radio in Boston.
You know what? If he was to do it when he was playing for the Houston Astros, I would say Mike Fiers has guts. But to go and do it after you leave the Houston Astros because they don't have you anymore, that doesn't show me anything. I mean, you're just a bad teammate. You're just a bad
teammate. But he's standing up for other pitchers in baseball because he's now with the other pitchers. That's the point. He's trying to help the other pitchers now.
If he was dominant like Gerrit Cole, if he was dominant like Justin Verlander or someone like that, Clayton Kershaw, I don't think he'll be saying anything. He'll be like standing up like I am doing right here and saying, it doesn't matter what you do. If I execute my plan, I'm going to get you out, regardless of what sign they relate to you. Good pitches are not hit. Mediocre pitching is the one that gets hit.
Baseball players abide by a code that smacks of something out of junior high school. Grow up, lads. Your sport is dying. To the NFL, where Eli Manning is doing the right thing, thankfully retiring at age 39, rather than prolonging the misery of his quarterbacking twilight. But is Eli a Hall of Famer? Sorry, I say no. I know he's one of only five NFL players with at least two Super Bowl MVP awards, and he did win those two championships in New York, but don't induct him into Canton just because his last name is Manning. If he were Eli Smith, we wouldn't be having this discussion. He was decidedly mediocre way too often, evidenced by a 117-117 record as a starter. And while he was a popular team guy and the fans loved him, he also had, don't forget, a memorabilia scandal. I say no, he's not a Hall of Famer. Super Bowl 54 features two teams that finally unlocked a fairly simple truth: speed kills. Forget the old school adage of the biggest and the burliest winning in the trenches, you know, scrum warfare. This is about Patrick Mahomes as a singular video game, the very personification of an air raid attack, getting rid of the ball quickly to Chiefs receivers who could assemble a U.S. relay team in the Olympic Games. Or if they happen to be covered, Mahomes maneuvering downfield like an action figure, tacklers bouncing off him. This is also about a 49er running back, Raheem Mostert, who operates a fast forward when everybody else on the field is just pressing play. And this is also about defenders on both sides who burn, baby, burn. A football field, as the Wall Street Journal reminds us, encompasses 57,600 square feet. It's nice to see a grandfather, Andy Reid, and a 40-year-old, Kyle Shanahan, figure out how to utilize all the space. Here's the latest from Mahomes, who will be dominating Americana the next week and a half.
I think the mentality of these guys in this locker room is that we want to get the big one. We want to not fall short. We want to make sure that we're going to the Super Bowl and that we can win it. And not regret not preparing or doing whatever it takes to do that. And I think as the guys in this locker room, we're going to take advantage of every single day. It's a long build for these next week and a half or whatever it is, but we're going to build every single day of just taking advantage of it and hopefully getting there and playing our best football and trying to find a way to win the football game.
And as ticket prices soar for a championship game between a team that hasn't been to a Super Bowl in 50 years and a team from the affluence of the Bay Area playing in that American party capital of Miami, I can't say enough about how fresh and compelling this matchup will be. It's almost worth the extra cost for the tickets. I'm not telling you how to spend your money, but you know what? Miami, cool Super Bowl, maybe this is the one you splurge on. We've heard a lot of players chirp already, but nobody has chirped like Kansas City's Frank Clark.
Last two games, each game, 70 yards, over 200 yards each game. I know damn well we weren't going to win the game if we let that happen. They come in here, he ran for 70 yards, they call him the best rusher in the league. We're sitting in this home early.
I posted the comments that you said to me, and all over social media, everybody said you better watch your back, that you're saying things that you can't catch. Everybody on social media said,
they must not know who I am yet. They're going to find out sooner or later when I got that ring on my finger. At the end of the day, we champions. AFC, that trophy that got my own and last name on it, that's the KC. That's KC. Ain't no fall off. Last year, jump off sides, all that. I told him when I got here, there's no change. Look at this. We're the best in the world.
Go join.
And Packers coach David LaFleur is disturbed by his team's lack of fire in the NFC title game, especially that of a defense that allowed 285 yards to Mostert in the San Francisco run game while Jimmy Garoppolo was throwing only eight passes. Said LaFleur, quote, "They definitely outcoached us," unquote, but he will be keeping defensive coordinator Mike Pettine, just as his buddy Shanahan wisely stuck by Robert Saleh last season. And after his epic 2019 season, which included his full-circle comeback from hell at Augusta National and his record-tying 82nd victory on the PGA Tour, what does 2020 have in store for Tiger Woods? With the possible exception of Alex Rodriguez, nobody in sports has turned hate to love more dramatically than Woods, who is the sentimental favorite in every major, even if Brooks Koepka is golf's dominant player. Woods returns to Torrey Pines this week, where he has won eight times in his career, and we'll be watching closely the next, 2.5 months to see if he's healthy and ready for another green jacket run. Here is Tiger knowing the masses want to see him win major number 16, which would leave him only two behind Jack Nicklaus.
To even get to the number I got to, or I'm at right now, 15's a lot. And that's, not too many guys and who are around have seen that kind of number before. So it's just going to take time. It took Jack about 26 years to get to it. It's taking me 20 some odd years to get to mine. So it just takes time to accumulate the number of wins. And yes, there were a number of years where I didn't compete and didn't play. So those were some missed opportunities. But granted, I'm playing again now, which is these are blessed opportunities. I didn't think I would have these.
Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, I have an idea. Let's put Antonio Brown, Silvio De Sousa, Rob Manfred, the rogue Jeter voter, and Conor McGregor in the same steel cage and see who comes out alive. First of all, before you ponder that, what did you make of the lunacy in Lawrence?
Jay, it was awful, but even watching it, as much as it was not great to watch, it sort of just was like whatever. And I think we've become so desensitized in society with just the violence that goes on and in sports. It's like, okay, whatever. Also, another point to that is that college basketball just is irrelevant. Nobody cares. Nobody cares unless you're in those small communities like Lawrence, Kansas, where Jayhawks, hoops, and athletics is the only thing going on. Nationally, nobody cares about college basketball until about 3 weeks, and that's March Madness, and that's it.
And, Chris, have we reached the point where we're not surprised to wake up one day and find Antonio Brown dead? I'm not being flippant, just honest.
It's a fall that we've seen before with athletes, and we'll see it again, and this one is amazing because it happened really so quickly. You know, it's just a drama, and even the people that have been vilified so bad, like the TOs of the world, right, over the years as being a diva and all these things, and yeah, he was not a great teammate, and he ultimately cut down a lot of years off his career to play at a championship level and compete for a Super Bowl. You know, the last few years, he was just playing just to play. But Antonio Brown, it went quick. It went quick on this one, and again, it's sad because he could be helping a team. He could have helped the New England Patriots, certainly. We all know that. And it's really remarkable how quickly it happened and how it just nobody seems to help him. And that's the sad part. And probably just because the people that were there to maybe help him, including his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, who has definitely dealt with plenty of miscreants in the past, is just like, enough. There's no saving him. And hopefully somebody is out there that can help him and save him.
And, Chris, if media people are responsible for covering sports, why are we part of sports and voting for legacy awards? Why are we making the news? The LA Times and New York Times have a policy. Staff writers do not vote for the Hall of Fame, the MVP, the Heisman Trophy, and other awards. What is your take on this?
You know, Jay, I think a lot of these awards, unfortunately, and Hall of Fames and all this, having writers involved in it, it was once thought that that would be the cleanest way, I guess, the most honest way, the most way to be judged by the media and the sports writers, and it was something of honor. Now, I don't think we can still say that, and I think that there's so much, I don't know if it's a better system to have your peers vote, former players being part of that as well. I really all take it with a grain of salt. I mean, when you look at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I mean, what we watched, does Jimmy Johnson deserve to be in? Absolutely, in my opinion. Bill Cowher? I don't know as much, but people love Bill Cowher. He's on TV. We can go through this time and time again. As for baseball's Hall of Fame, you're going to put Derek Jeter in, fine. Are we really at this point not going to put Barry Bonds in? Are we not going to put Roger Clemens? I mean, this is what the joke has become. And part of that is sports' fault, and part of that is just the media's fault. And you're absolutely right about the media now making the news.
And Chris, Eli Manning, Hall of Famer or not?
Not a Hall of Famer, but will be a Hall of Famer, obviously, because he's a Manning. But two Super Bowl wins, that's fine. But then you got to put Jim Plunkett in. You got to put Tom Flores in. Why not?
And finally, Chris, your thoughts on Zion Williamson's debut.
Well, it looked shaky. He looked thick. He's definitely overweight. He's definitely not as quick as he probably should be. But it turned out for a great story in the fourth quarter. And who knew? I didn't really know Zion could shoot like that consistently. Boom, 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 boom. So that's awesome. I'm happy for him, but hopefully they get him in the gym and maybe get a nutritionist and take care of him, okay?
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. Amid the bushfires and smoky air, the Australian Open marches on with big drama. Coco Gauff, still 15, made another early splash in a major and planted another seed for a sport-defining rivalry with Naomi Osaka. Serena Williams is still pursuing her 24th career Grand Slam title, which would tie the record of Aussie Margaret Court. Keeping in mind, Serena hasn't won a slam since she won in Melbourne in her early stages of pregnancy. I keep bringing this up. It's starting to get a little tiresome. I would like her to win this time. I don't see it happening. Rafael Nadal is trying to equal Roger Federer's record of 20 Grand Slam single titles on the men's side, though Novak Djokovic always is the favorite down under. And Maria Sharapova, she has now lost in the first round of three straight majors. If I ran a TV sports network, I would hire her right now as an analyst and have her tee off on people. Let's not punish the rest of college basketball for the sins of Kansas. Baylor is the nation's seventh number one ranked team in a season of unparalleled parity, which is kind of fun and beats the usual parade of blue bloods. Get used to it. This is how the sport is going to look when the one-and-done rule ends and premier high school players head straight to the NBA again. The overall quality of play will suffer without the likes of Zion and Anthony Davis anchoring the sport for a year. And good luck to the NBA as it endures a new round of immaturity and slow growth. But those who get tired of the same powerhouses in college hoops will be happy to see a wider pool of possible title teams, an extreme form of March Madness. Think about it. Baylor, San Diego State, Dayton, Seton Hall, Colorado, Houston, Northern Iowa, Rutgers, Liberty, Duquesne. What? I love the new names, though only the Hoopniks can name the players on those teams. And I guess I'm fine with LaMelo Ball playing in Australia and then shutting down his season before the draft. And I'm fine with James Wiseman quitting the Memphis program and declaring for the draft after it was learned that Coach Penny Hardaway, though just a booster at the time, paid $11,500 to help Wiseman's family move from Nashville to Memphis. As you can tell, I don't want people paying these players. I'm tired of the smut, the under the table. Let's have a Final Four of Dayton and Houston and Northern Iowa and Liberty. I'm fine with that. Liberty, Liberty. That's a bad commercial, by the way. Actually, I'm going to adopt the team. Dayton. Go Flyers. And those who remember Delonte West as a productive NBA and college player were horrified to see the video on social media. West handcuffed and sprawled shirtless on a Maryland highway after being assaulted.
Snakes on my life.
What?
Man, all right.
Why'd you hit him? Did he attack you first with the self-defense, or did you hit him?
Man, I walked down the street. The man approached me with an eye butt with a gun.
He approached you, where's his gun at?
I don't give a f-.
Okay. Do you know where his gun is?
I don't give a f-.
Okay.
Young champ. I'm the leader of the goddamn Navy SEALs. And the Army. And the Navy. President Trump, I'm the real president.
Okay.
I'm right now, I'm about to lead them. All the games. What happened?
All right.
The NBA has been progressive in embracing human wellness and mental health, and in Delonte's case, it's time to save him immediately from a tragedy.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
Last we saw Kenneth Starr in the brightest of public lights. He was in denial about a campus sexual assault crisis involving the Baylor University football program. Blind to criminal reality and deaf to young women who said he rebuffed their pleas for help, Starr was removed as school president by the Regents after a series of indictments. Coach Art Briles has been all but blackballed from his profession, forced to take a coaching job at a Texas high school, yet Starr has returned as part of the legal defense team in the impeachment trial of President Trump. Does anybody think this is a good look? Starr defending Trump after he investigated Bill Clinton in the Monica Lewinsky case? My rule about politics on this podcast reads as follows. When a political topic pertains to sports, we cover it. Starr's alarming negligence at Baylor and his defense of Trump in only the third impeachment proceeding in American history is indeed a story where, in good conscience, we cannot possibly stick to sports. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life. Yeah.